you've heard the mantra, know where your food comes from. So for a lot of people, that's a command to get to know farmers and cooks and come home with cage-free eggs. But I often think of it as the key to finding stories. Because everywhere you look, up and down the food chain, you can find fascinating, world-changing details. And later this hour, we'll talk with a forager who harvests wild plants for food, but really does it to figure out the character of the place where he lives. We'll learn how some fish get hot or not. And right now, we're going to talk about how chicken may have doomed life on Earth, and how it might save it. So I'm exaggerating, but maybe only a little, because Maren McKenna is a tremendous journalist who happens to have one of the scariest specialties I can imagine. She's an expert on superbugs, bacteria that has evolved to survive antibiotics. I followed her work for years, to be honest, mostly with like my hands over my eyes, but her research brought her to a place that I couldn't ignore. Chicken. Because, as she's found, it's the chicken industry that we can mostly blame for our enormous overuse of antibiotics. But as she followed the story of Big Chicken, Maren also found a real reason for hope. So hi, Maren. So great to have you here today.
I am so excited to talk to you.
I am too, although I'm a little terrified, to be honest. But okay, well, let's start. So you have this idea that once raising chickens stopped being about growing animals and became more about growing meat, the industry basically became this like laboratory of technological innovation. And I love this story of how 50 or 60 years ago, there was a contest to create what they were calling the chicken of tomorrow. So what in their minds was the chicken of tomorrow?
First, thank you for doing the sound effect behind that, because that is exactly what I hear in my head when I think of the chicken of tomorrow. So in order to understand the chicken of tomorrow, which is actually the chicken that we eat right now, you have to think about what chickens were like in the chicken of yesterday, which would have been the chickens outside the back doors of our grandparents or great-grandparents. They would have been mostly chickens that were there to lay eggs. And they would, for the most part, have been eaten after their egg-laying days were done, which means that they would have had several years of running around a barnyard or a backyard after chicks, flapping up into trees, pecking around for insects and so forth. And while that all that exercise and diet might have made them very rich tasting, it would also have made them kind of scrawny and stringy. And in order to get people to eat more chicken, which was the entire goal of this, was to increase the demand for chicken because industrialization was already increasing the supply of chicken. The USDA and the A&P supermarket chain held this contest, the goal of which was to physically remake the chicken, to hybridize chickens from those varieties of backyard chicken all over the country so that they would be first white-feathered, because that was more appealing to consumers, and docile, not running around a barnyard, but willing to sit in one place, but most of all, meaty. When they proposed the contest, they talked about breasts you could slice like a steak, which not only sounds delicious, but also gives you a sense of what a chicken breast must have been like before this contest. And out of the chicken of tomorrow, that marks the transition from chickens as a backyard thing or as heritage varieties that differ from town to town and ecosystem to ecosystem to one consistent chicken really all over the world that looks the same, gains weight in the same manner, has the same temperament and the same sort of body composition, and produces all that meat that is now the number one meat that we eat in America.
And so to get to that point where you have chicken as the number one meat, they had to make all these technological innovations to keep making the growing of chicken faster and more efficient and cheaper. And maybe the most important one you write about is that the chicken industry was the first industry to introduce antibiotics to the animals, which no one had done before. Why did they start doing that?
There's a pretty interesting nexus of a couple of different trends happening, and they all happen at the end of World War II. The first is that antibiotics come on the market. All of the antibiotics that we think of as starting the antibiotic era arrive between about 1944 and 1948. And they make an enormous social impact. They change the course of the war. They bring soldiers and sailors back that otherwise would have died on the battlefield. And the war also marks a huge upsurge in the infrastructure of growing meat so that all those soldiers and sailors can be fed. But when the war ends, that guaranteed market goes away, and the meat industry suddenly needs, in order to keep from collapsing, to cut its costs really sharply. So they start using much cheaper feed. And then they start looking for supplements that they can add to that cheap feed in order to make it more nutritious. And this rogue scientist, Thomas Jukes, who's a specialist in the dietary needs of chickens and who happens to work for one of the companies that made one of these first antibiotics, gets the idea to try dosing chickens with tiny, tiny doses of antibiotic in their feed. And when he conducts an experiment in 1948 to figure out if this is going to work, he gives a set of chickens all kinds of different supplements. And the ones that get the tiny doses of antibiotics grow faster than any of the others.
Wait, so why do antibiotics make the chickens grow faster? Because they're not hormones. They're not growth hormones.
Right. Antibiotics are compounds made by bacteria to kill other bacteria. That's what they were originally before we took them into the lab and synthesized them and made them more perfect. So we give antibiotics to animals in their feed and water. So they're swallowed, they go into the guts, and then they affect the community of bacteria that exist in the guts of animals and every living thing in such a way that it changes their uptake of nutrition and it makes them put on tasty muscle mass faster than they otherwise would.
Huh. And why is it a problem?
Well, it's a problem for a whole nested set of reasons. It's a problem first because most of those antibiotics aren't being given to animals that are sick. And in human medicine, we take for granted that antibiotics exist in order to cure something. But most of the use in agriculture isn't to cure anything. It's for these other uses. The second is that as we start to give antibiotics to animals, it gives us kind of a new framework to think about the way we raise them that undermines animal welfare, that causes farms to be more concentrated, that changes the economics of farms, the balance between industry and labor. But the most important reason that we should be concerned about this is because when antibiotics are given to animals in that manner, it causes antibiotic-resistant bacteria to arise and flourish in their guts, in that collection of bacteria that lives in the guts of every animal and every other living thing, including us. And those antibiotic-resistant bacteria then exit the animal, either on its meat when it gets disassembled at slaughter, or in its manure, which then goes into the farm environment. And one way or another, through various pathways, those drug-resistant bacteria travel to humans and cause drug-resistant infections.
But you also write in your book that, I don't know if it's a happy ending, but maybe a hopeful ending, which is that it seems that the chicken industry, which started this, may actually be helping to lead us out of it. Can you tell me about that?
Yeah, it's a really lovely and sort of surprising symmetry in this long history of making this mistake. Starting about 4 years ago, poultry producers, led by the company Purdue Farms, which are the fourth largest chicken company in America, started to turn away from routine antibiotic use. The head of Purdue, Jim Purdue, the grandson of the founder, actually called a press conference in Washington in 2014 and announced that his company had decided to go as close to antibiotic-free as they could. And now, 3 years later, they are very, very close. And after Purdue came so many other poultry production companies and food service companies, you know, Purdue and then Tyson, Chick-fil-A and then McDonald's, Costco and Walmart, and a whole suite of fast food chains all announced that they were going to pursue antibiotic-free chicken. The backdrop to all of this, the reason why this happened, the sort of proximate reason, is that there was a change in regulations around antibiotic use in agriculture in the U.S. But the real reason, I believe, is that consumers were turning against antibiotic use and were speaking up to companies and saying, we don't want to spend our food dollars on this anymore. We want you to find a different way.
I hate that I'd be naive, but it really is something like enough people just said, I don't want to eat chicken with antibiotics. I don't want to feed that to my kids. That's really why they changed?
I really think so. So Purdue says that before they made this change, They were getting 3,000 comments from their customers a month through various channels asking about antibiotic use. And before that company made this change and started the snowball rolling, there were very large healthcare systems like the University of California and very large school systems like the Chicago Public Schools that were saying to the meat production industry, we're going to change our buying. We're not going to spend our money on this anymore. And when buyers that large speak to big companies listen.
Yeah. And so the hope here is that through our, meaning us, the consumers, we can keep demanding this and our producers will respond and they can show how you can have these industries without this practice. Thank you so much, Marin, for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
Marin McKenna is the author of Big Chicken, the incredible story of how antibiotics created modern agriculture and changed the way the world eats. So, you know, I have to say, it's easy. It's so easy to be cynical and to feel hopeless about our food system sometimes. And so, to me, it's incredibly energizing to hear stories like Marin's, that you can really vote with your dollars, and even enormous industrial chicken companies can make huge and maybe world-changing choices just because ordinary people showed them what we want. So I just finished editing a book by a guy named Sam Kass about that idea. And Sam was a chef, but he was also Barack Obama's senior advisor on food policy. So he's seen how the sausage gets made. And the big thing he took away from his years in the White House is that government is powerful, but the real power is in the everyday choices that regular people make. And what that means for us is that basically, you don't have to worry about being a perfect eater. You don't have to go vegan. All you need to do is to make a few choices today, or this week, or this month, that are just a little better than what you did before. And so in terms of sustainability, for instance, eating pork is a little better than eating beef. And eating chicken is a little better than pork. And fish is a little better than that. And of course, vegetables and beans are better than that. But what that means is if you skip a burger like today and have a chicken sandwich instead, you're already doing a little better. And all those little choices add up.